This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Not in Washington today. I'm still down in Louisiana. We're broadcasting outside of Baton Rouge as we continue in the relief efforts here. But I'll be back in Washington next week because coming up is the Values Voter Summit. Yes, you'll want to be there for that. I'll talk more about that in just a moment. But coming up on today's program, Donald Trump doubled down last night on his pledge to build a wall of separation between law and order and lawlessness. Former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, an advisor to the campaign, joins me with details in just a moment. And do you remember candidate Barack Obama's slap at conservatives when he said they cling to their guns and God when they're disturbed by things around them? Well, a new survey suggests that he had a portion of that right. Which portion? George Barna, a straight shooter, will tell us a little later here on Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics, and you can also find out more information about the Values Voter Summit that is coming up September the 9th, 10th, and 11th. I mean, it's next week, folks. If you're not already registered, I think we can squeeze you in, but you got to register soon. Look, here's some of the folks that are going to be speaking. In fact, you're going to hear these first two on the program today. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, George Barna, David and Jason Benham, Dr. Bill Bennett, our honoree for the Leadership Award this year, Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky, of course, our favorite general, General Boykin, Congressman Jim Bridenstine, Senator Tom Cotton, David DeLayden, who exposed Planned Parenthood, Dr. James Dobson, Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina, our favorite Congressman Louie Gohmert's going to be there, General Gary Harrell, who was a part of Black Hawk Down, he's going to be there, Jim Jordan from Ohio, Coach Joe Kennedy, he's going to be there, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, Chaplain Wes Motter, it's going to be there, and Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North will be among the speakers, Dr. Everett Piper, and Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty, Senator Rick Santorum, Senator Tim Scott, of course, Todd Starnes with Fox News. Donald Trump is also going to be there, as well as John Voight and Colonel Alan West, and the list goes on. The only name missing as I look down this list is yours, so go quickly. Over to TonyPerkins.com and register for this year's Values Voter Summit. All right, if you're on Twitter, you can get all kinds of information and tracking what's happening at T. Perkins. Okay, last night, GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump gave a speech laying out his immigration plan, a speech that many political pundits believe is the most important so far in his political career, as short as it is. Trump doubled down on his earlier stance to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, stating that the wall will be impenetrable, physical, tall, powerful, beautiful. That's a lot of things. Well, giving this physical description to the wall dispels the notion that the wall would simply be a virtual wall. Now, Trump also said there would be no amnesty for illegal immigrants currently in the United States of America. One major push was that his immigration policy would put the American people first, not wealthy donors or powerful politicians, but one that, quote-unquote, serves the American people. Joining me now with her analysis on Donald Trump's immigration speech last night, former Minnesota Congresswoman, 2012 presidential candidate and advisor to the Trump campaign, Michelle Bachmann. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. It's great to hear your voice again. You sound great, and our prayers have been with you with all the devastation that you and your neighbors have experienced down in Louisiana. We're with you.
Well, I appreciate that. We are still sorting through the rubble. It's quite amazing what nature can do. But anyway, we know from Romans 8:28 that something good is going to come of this. I am confident of that very thing. Amen. Let me, more than any other member of Congress, as you and I worked together closely over the last almost decade, you have a good understanding and handle on foreign policy issues, and that includes even the things happening in this continent and the immigration issue. What did you think of Donald Trump's speech last night?
It was, we saw President Trump last night very clearly. It was extremely presidential. But what he did is hit a total grand slam on what I believe is the most important public policy issue facing the nation. I think for your audience, for you and I, we recognize the number one issue facing this nation is a nation that has been turning its way against God. That's number one. But number two would be in public policy would be immigration. And why is that true? Because we have historically been a Judeo-Christian nation decidedly built on a biblical worldview. And since 1965, America's stated immigration policy has been to prefer those who do not hold to a Christian worldview. And that's had a profound impact on the United States.
And it's interesting because he made the point in his speech last night. He said, it is our right as a sovereign nation to choose immigrants we think are the likeliest to thrive and flourish and love us, meaning that there is place. In fact, there is a mandate for a sovereign nation to determine who comes in and who doesn't.
Well, that's exactly right. It's not only the right of government, it's the duty of government to protect its citizens, and that's what the angel moms who were on stage last night showed, that there are very real, devastating, personal consequences that come from allowing people into our country and not punishing lawlessness and instead rewarding bad behavior. Those are some of the results we see, and that's exactly what Donald Trump will stop.
It's interesting how the media... And this is one of the things I like about Donald Trump, is that the media has hammered him, mischaracterized his position to the point where they thought he was kind of moving back, rethinking his position. Last night, he made very clear he's intent on building a wall. He is going forward, even though the media is against this idea of America being a sovereign nation with borders.
Oh, exactly. Last night, I was listening to all 10 of the points that Donald Trump put out, and I have been heavily involved in this issue of immigration, whether it's legal or illegal, for a long time and the negative ramifications. He was right on every single point. He was emphatic. He wasn't wavering. I have never, ever heard a candidate running for president who has been so more candid and putting forth very popular position, popular with American people, not popular with inside the Beltway political types, not popular with editorial boards across the country, not popular with people who want one world government, but very, very popular with people who love America. That's what people saw last night, a President Trump who loves America, who gets the heartbeat of the average American. And what I love too, Tony, he most assuredly reached out to young African-American youth and young Latino youth that are legally here in the United States. And he said, look, you're suffering more than anyone from this influx of unskilled labor that's coming into America, and I want to help you. And I thought it was fantastic what he said. And I believe Donald Trump is a man of his word. I believe that Donald Trump will build the wall. And I believe he will find a way to get it paid for by the people who have benefited most. I mean, don't forget, one-fourth of Mexico now lives in the United States of America. And Mexico has been enriched by all of the payments that those Mexicans have been sending back to the government of Mexico. So whether there's a fee or a tax that is put on remittances or whatever, what we heard from Donald Trump last night is that he will enforce the law. He wants to be a man to uphold the law versus Hillary Clinton, who has a stated goal to remain lawless. In fact, her daughter Chelsea actually said that Hillary Clinton plans to give a government-paid-for lawyer to every illegal alien in the United States. And she said Hillary Clinton will provide Obamacare free every illegal alien in the United States. We need to wake up and realize what it is that Hillary Clinton will do if she becomes president.
Yeah, just build on the legacy of Barack Obama, which has been one lawless act after another. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, discussing last night's speech by Donald Trump regarding his immigration policy. Now, Michelle, let me ask you this, because you understand this very well, because you were out on the campaign trail running for president and, in fact, won the early Iowa straw poll. I mean, you had a very successful campaign in those in the early primary. And you have to see that, I mean, I see it. I want to see if you agree with me or not. But America, Americans, you talked about that Donald Trump is trying to reach and is reaching and was communicating with last night. They're fed up with the media elites and the political class in Washington who are continuing the same old thing and are basically putting their fingers in their ears when it comes to listening to the American people. And Donald Trump is speaking and listening directly to them. Is that a fair observation?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, none of us have ever seen a media that has converted itself into Hillary Clinton's personal press corps more than this election cycle. In no previous election cycle have we ever seen anything this marching in lockstep. And Donald Trump is nobody's fool, and Donald Trump is his own man. I've known him personally for 5 years. What you see is what you get. But he's a very common sense guy. He gets America. He loves America. He has 1950s sensibilities. And he's taking really a page out of Ronald Reagan's plan, because Ronald Reagan had the press corps against him, and Ronald Reagan trusted the hearts of the American people. And so his message was directed directly to the hearts of the American people. He didn't try to win over the press corps. Donald Trump isn't trying to win over the press corps. As a matter of fact, he punches back against right. the press corps, and he goes to the hearts of the people. If you look at the reaction in the arena last night in Phoenix, for any of your listeners, Tony, who didn't watch Donald Trump's speech last night, you can just Google that speech and watch it from beginning to end. I was standing on my feet in our basement last night watching this, cheering, laughing, roaring. I was so encouraged and so inspired by that speech, because I saw a man who's not content to look at the decline of America. This is a man who's fighting back and who's going to make sure that America really does win again. If you want to have hope and if you want to be inspired, watch Donald Trump give his speech on immigration. You can't help but cheer him on and want him to win in November, because then we win. It's about us. He wants America to win. He wants our families to win. He wants our faith to have religious liberty again. And I think this is something that we can all get behind.
I think so. I think people are just so hungry for someone who will just talk straight to them and not put a spin on the problems facing America, but face them head on. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for being with us today, and look forward to catching up with you next week at the Values Voter Summit.
Will do. Thanks again. God bless.
All right. Michelle Bachmann, great, great lady. Boy, we would have done well had she become president. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to be talking with George Barna. God and guns. Where's the connection? We're going to talk about that when we come back here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're coming back with a lot more program after this.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary, and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stopped along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES. option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Or visit the website twholyland.com.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
$22 billion of damage occurred last year in October in South Carolina due to flooding. They saw rain that they had never seen. It was a 1,000-year flood. And now you and I get a chance to go with 8 Days of Hope this October to help hundreds of families rebuild their homes. 16,000 homes suffered some type of damage. We expect thousands of volunteers to come from around the country to southeastern South Carolina in October. We're looking for roofers and plumbers and electricians, people that know how to paint and hang drywall. There's something for everybody at 8 Days of Hope. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
Help us to be the hands and feet of Jesus. Sign up for at least 3 days between October 8th and 15th. And if you're not able to go, you can still help with a financial donation at 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
Hi, this is David Harms with India Partners, and thank you. We have presented to you the need of funding a children's home and orphanage in Southeast India. The fact that we needed to do this rather quickly because of the building codes in India requiring separate orphanages for boys and girls. And so with the land purchased and the site prepared and the permits all procured, all we needed was the funding to actually build the building. And thanks to you, the AFR family, that funding is now in place. We cannot say thank you enough. And what that means is that even before the September 15th deadline, we will be able to break ground, start putting in the foundation, and everything will work just according to plan, in that these boys that were at risk of being put into a government orphanage or an orphanage run by another religion, that's not going to happen. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Want to find out more or still give? Go to AFR.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. I have discovered, let me just say this. We went back into the archives and we got a clip of Barack Obama when he was a candidate back in 2008 when he was running for president. And I'll let you listen to this first, and then I'll explain. So here's Barack Obama as a candidate, Senator Barack Obama, running for president.
I'm not surprising them that they get bitter and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy towards people who aren't like them.
Now, it was hard to hear, I understand, but it's not the best quality. But it was a clip of him speaking at a fundraiser and an event in which he's basically dissing Flyover America, where he was talking about those people, they cling to their guns and their religion, guns and God, when they get upset. Well, I have discussed several times in this program regarding the complexity of evangelical voters. We are not simply one-issue voters, but we take into account several factors when voting. And one of our main concerns and values is the protection of the Constitution. I mean, there's a reason. The reason the founders put it there, a reason we want it to stay there. For instance, our First Amendment freedoms and our Second Amendment freedoms. Now, while some may think that the idea of Christians owning guns is a contradiction, new information out from the American Culture of Faith Institute, Culture and Faith Institute, shows that nearly 60% of spiritually engaged voters own a gun. I would have to put an S beside that as well. By the way, this group is also more likely to pray for peace and for the nation's political leaders each week than those who do not own guns. See, a little more complex than the media elite would lead you to believe. Well, joining me now with the latest on this, this actual survey that goes into guns and God, is the founder of the Barna Group and executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, George Barna. George, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, how you doing?
Well, good. And I'm having you on because I know you're a straight shooter. So, George, let's talk.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah, no pun intended. That's right. I thought this was very fascinating, this survey that you took, where almost 58%, almost 60% of spiritually engaged, that's the sage cons that we've been talking about in this program, those are the ones who are spiritually active in culturally and politically engaged, that they own guns, but not because they're necessarily want to use them against the government, as some would suggest, but they're some of the most patriotic Americans. Share with our listeners what you found in this survey.
I mean, it's interesting. You go to the mainstream media, and what you're led to believe is that people who have guns are, you know, what they might call white trash. But what we discovered is that these sage cons, the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, are individuals, the vast majority of whom, about three-quarters of them, have at least a bachelor's degree. A large share of them have advanced degrees beyond that, graduate-level degrees. The median household income of these individuals is over $100,000 per household. They tend to be married. They have kids. They're registered to vote. They regularly exercise that right to vote. You know, these are people who love God. They love country, their country. They love their family. And they pray for these things. They pray for their church. They pray for their government leaders. They pray for peace on earth, as you alluded to. We find that these are not people who are waiting for any, you know, anything to just cause them to go out in the streets and pull the trigger. We found that 96% of them describe themselves as pro-life advocates because they believe life matters, that life is a holy gift from God. So, I mean, there's a whole different way of looking at these people. They're spiritually devout. They go to church regularly. They read the Bible multiple times per week. 96% of them believe that the Bible is the inerrant word of God. You know, so their whole life is wrapped up in trying to honor God. It's not about taking matters into their own hands.
Right, right. Well, I guess, and they would take the words of Jesus in Luke chapter 22 when he says, if you don't have a sword, go out and buy one. So let me ask you, is there a correlation between the advanced degrees and the number of guns you have? Because I need to explain it to my wife if that's the case.
No, I can't help you there.
Oh, okay. I was saying I could use that as justification, but anyway.
Yeah, you're on your own, buddy.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. I'll do my best. I do find this interesting is that this totally, totally annihilates the allegations, as you said, about the media and even President Obama. I know that clip was hard to hear, but stereotyping Christians as having guns and God because they're fearful and they're clinging to it. Rather, they live out of their understanding of Scripture, and all of these things are really just a part of who they are because of their faith.
Absolutely true. And you know, one of the ways that I was able to look at it after going through a lot of data related to this is these are people who take responsibility seriously. And so they look at their faith, they look at their family, they look at their country, and they recognize that they have certain responsibilities and rights. And so they look at the Constitution, they understand they have a right to own a gun, but they understand that the responsibility is to use it only if they absolutely need to protect their family. They know that there are other institutions, there are other mechanisms that are in place to do those things. But because they have a commitment to their family and a responsibility to it, yes, maybe at some point a gun is going to be necessary. But, you know, that's not their first line of solution.
But it's there. And they understand the importance of that in the Constitution, in the Second Amendment, and the Bill of Rights. George, we're up against a break, but I want to ask you to hold on because I want to ask you the political implications of these views on the Second Amendment and gun ownership when we return. So don't go away. Folks, George Barna, my guest. I love having George on. I really like to look at the numbers. Not that it helps you make, you know, that it drives what you think, but it helps you understand where people are and what you need to do to, you know, move people in some ways. But I think this is fascinating when you look at the Second Amendment, Christians, gun ownership, and what they want to do with those guns. It's completely counter to the stereotype that politicians like Barack Obama and the media would like to facilitate. Okay, don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to talk to finish our conversation with George, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. So don't go away.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, interesting. The dollar is gaining once again, and it seems to continue to gain. And it's particularly gaining against the yen. This is not a good thing, because it's going to unleash some sort of round of quantitative easing by the Japanese government. They cannot afford to have the dollar gaining this much ground on the yen. They will do some sort of quantitative easing and ramp up the currency war they started 2 years ago. Of course, this is going to ramp up some more currency manipulation by China, as they can't afford to lose any market share because of a lack of competitiveness to Japan. It's going to be interesting to watch this and see how it shakes out. One of the interesting numbers here in America is productivity number -0.6%. That is exactly what I predicted last week. And sure enough, we are at a -0.6%, 0.6% compared to 0.5% that was the expectation and was last look. Productivity still in negative territory for the second quarter. Can't even imagine how the final look at second quarter GDP could be possibly over 1.2%. And it could even go below 1%, since the second look was lower than the first look. But look, we do not have an economy without productivity. And we continue to see this move down at the very same time. Labor cost continues to move up. And I think we can blame health insurance for labor costs, because one thing we know, it's not an increase in wages.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Just a reminder, Values Voters Summit, talked about it earlier, coming up September the 9th, 10th, and 11th. And great lineup of speakers. In fact, my current guest, George Barna, is going to be one of the speakers there at this year's Values Voters Summit. So you will not want to miss it. If at all possible, I encourage you to be there. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, George, thanks for sticking around. I want to ask you the question, the correlation or the connection between these sage cons, these socially or these politically active, spiritually engaged. I always get that term mixed up. But anyway, you know what I mean. These guys that are conservative Christians who believe the Bible, who own guns, where's the connection with Donald Trump? Where do they stand when it comes to this presidential election?
Well, I mean, this is a group of people that makes no bones about it. They are incredibly frustrated with what's going on in the country. I mean, we found that 92% of them said they're angry about the state of the country. 93% are dissatisfied with the way things are going. More than 95% want to curb the size and the power of the federal government. And so these people are looking for a change, a very significant change. What they want to do is they want to bring the country back to what the Constitution calls it to be. And so when they hear Mr. Trump, you know, railing against political correctness and talking about making things more reasonable and getting government out of people's lives, that resonates with this group. It's not that they want to be unruly. It's just the opposite. It's that they want to have the opportunity to determine the values that their family is going to live according to. And I will tell you from the research, that will be according to the scriptures. That's what they're looking for. They want the opportunity to live that way.
Now, the vast majority of those who fall into this category of the 60, near 60% of Christian, conservative Christian who owns guns, that number of them supporting Donald Trump is over 85%. So, I mean, it's almost like he has that entire block locked up. But he's got to reach beyond that to be successful in this election. Can he do that?
He can. You know, it takes time. It's just, well, I think if you look at the current polls, we got to be careful. I mean, we're just about to enter the real start of the race, if you will.
So right. After Labor Day is when people really begin to focus.
Pretty much. You know, and right now, as you mentioned, he's got about 86% or so of the Sage cons who own guns. Can he get others behind him? Yes. But the American people make their choices over a period of time. Right now, almost everybody has made a choice, but they're not locked into that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing currently is kind of the drip, drip, drip of the leaky faucet, that leaky faucet being all the scandals connected to Mrs. Clinton. And so the American people, as I interpret what's going on, are in a process of reevaluating. They've got issues with Mr. Trump. They've got issues with Mrs. Clinton. And so they're trying to figure out what really does matter in this election. They've pretty much figured they're not really going to get a person of character because there are character issues on both sides. But what they are also thinking is, boy, but do I want somebody who I know breaks the law, doesn't seem to have any remorse about it, you know, has all kinds of ethical and moral issues that seem to keep coming up. And the American people are not quite at a point, I believe, based on studying morals and values, where they say, yep, I want a leader who's going to consistently lie to me and maybe steal from me as well. I don't think we've reached that point. Now, honestly, I think America is moving toward that, where we're in this state of moral freefall, almost a state of moral anarchy. But I mm-hmm. don't think we're there yet. So I think these next 2 months are going to be really interesting in terms of the campaign itself.
Well, George Barna, let me ask you a question then based on that. I mean, I saw the poll from, I think it was the ABC and Washington Post this week had the poll about the negatives, that Hillary Clinton's negatives, 59%, unfavorables, I should say, and Donald Trump, 60%. In an election like that where nobody likes the candidates, so, you know, I know it's a broad statement, but the polls suggest that that's the thought of a lot of people. Do issues become more important then over personality?
You know, the amazing thing to me in studying the electorate is that when you talk with people about what matters most, they'll always tell you, oh, it's the issues, their stance on issues. But then after the fact, when you tear it apart, you talk to them about, so why did you choose that person? How did you come to that conclusion and so forth? What you inevitably find is that it was based on emotions. And so ultimately, on November 8th, what we're going to have is people voting their feelings, perhaps more than they're going to be voting their intellect.
Very interesting. George Barna, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. I did too, Tony. Take care.
All right, George Barna. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. By the way, he has a regular newsletter that he puts out with a lot of this polling data. What he's doing is that he has all of these conservative Christians and others in a database, and he is constantly polling and surveying and getting this information. So it's like real time, and it's just very fascinating. And you can find out more about it. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. In fact, you can even be a part of it once you sign up and become a part of the pool of Christian voters, or engaged Christians, as he calls them. Okay, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. I want to know, what do you think about this? Guns and God. Do you own guns? If not, are you going to go out and buy one? I don't know. Let's talk about guns. What do you think about this? Is this something, you know, should Christians want to have guns? What do you think? Let's talk about it. 866-372-7234. We're going to talk guns and God. Don't go away.
As an attorney in communist Romania, Virginia Prodan searched for the truth. When she finally found it in the most forbidden book, the Bible, she made it her mission to defend fellow followers of Jesus Christ against unjust persecution. For this, Virginia was kidnapped, beaten, tortured, and placed under house arrest, even coming within seconds of being executed by order of Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian dictator. Virginia Prodan's extraordinary courage, her search for truth, and her defiance in the face of evil is the subject of a riveting talk that she delivered at FRC's headquarters in Washington, D.C., marking the release of her memoir, Saving My Assassin. Visit frc.org/Romania to listen to her account, as well as the disturbing parallels she sees between attacks on religious liberty in Romania during the 1980s and what is happening in America today. That's frc.org/Romania.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
The more Trivia Friday you get, what? The merrier. Coming this Labor Day.
So, you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Well, tune in for a Trivia Friday marathon on American Family Radio.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Well, I give in to uncontrollable laughter for hours with the Trivia Friday marathon. Labor Day morning starting at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Oh, I guess I need to reholster. You're listening to Washington Watch. That was a joke. I'm Tony Perkins, glad to have you here on this Thursday afternoon on Washington Watch. Talking guns and God, George Barna, new survey out showing that nearly 60% of conservative, socially conservative, spiritually engaged, politically engaged, whatever that is, it's conservative Christians, all right, who are engaged politically, own guns. So, what about you? Let's talk guns and God. We're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. First to Texas, where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm well, and I just want you to know we have been praying for y'all and for all the relief efforts there. I mean, I grew up on the Gulf Coast, so I know little of what you're going through.
Well, but, thank you. Texas has been very good to us in this. We've had a number of shipment of supplies from Galveston that knows quite well the impact of hurricanes and storms. So we're very grateful for really folks all across this country, Carol, who have just reached out and helped and been ministering through our church, Greenville Springs Baptist Church. So thank you for the prayers so much. We appreciate
it. I was hoping our Texas Baptist men had gotten down there to help also. You know, they usually...
I'm sure they're somewhere to be found. We've had a lot of folks in a lot of different places working. The need is so great. So a lot of places to serve. But this, I have personally seen and spoken to lots of folks from Texas as our church has kind of served as a hub in this region. So we're just very grateful to see Christians reaching out to help their brothers and sisters in need. So Texas has been a good neighbor.
Well, that's what we're called to do. You know, it's funny, you had George Barna on, and I've participated in a number of his surveys lately, of the Barna Institute surveys, and I am what I consider an engaged Christian, very conservative. And yes, I own guns. It's not for the purpose of violence or to commit crime. But there's the simple fact that I grew up with guns. I enjoy shooting. But also for home protection.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think, tell me if you think I'm right, but I think as we've seen more lawlessness, which has started at the top and spread out across our culture, that people who want to protect their families and their homes are more inclined to buy a gun.
I mean, it's not a recent purchase. I've owned guns. I'm quite a bit older than you, but I have owned guns for, I would say, probably the last 30 years. And it's because I grew up with them, grew up hunting, grew up basically competing against my brothers as far as who could hit the tin cans better.
Mm-hmm.
It is not something that I find horrible to have around. I know there are people who are horrified when they say, oh my gosh, you own guns. And I'm like, yes, I do. And I know how to use them. But I also am licensed. I have a concealed carry permit. And I have every intention of keeping my guns.
And I think there are many, many Christians that share that view.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Tony.
Well, thank you, Carol, for being a faithful listener to Washington Watch. And thanks again to all the folks in Texas for helping us out over here in Louisiana. 866-372-7234, talking guns and God. And, you know, I've been a gun owner since I was, I don't know, 15 years old. I got my first gun, 22 rifle that I hunted with. And, of course, I've had many occupations in which, you know, guns are a part of it, Marine Corps, police officer. And, I have an obligation and a duty to protect my family. And I do believe, and we've seen it in the gun sales, I should have bought stock in one of the gun companies 8 years ago. Because I think as the threat to gun ownership has increased, as has the lawlessness, more people are buying guns to protect themselves, not to use them in an offensive way, but simply in a defensive way to protect themselves and provide the security that they're responsible for. All right, let's go to North Carolina where Jamie is on the line. Jamie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. On the way home from work, I guess you're still at work, but you sound like a pretty good job going on. So
I got a great job. I get to talk to folks like you and work at the Family Research Council, so I got a great job.
Yes, sir. I believe that gun ownership is very consistent with Christian worldview, and Jesus told his disciples that they needed to sell a coat if they didn't have a sword, and modern day sword would be your pistol that you can carry. And I believe that it's all right as Christians to protect our families and be that first line of defense in case, you know, anything happens. And I've been in a situation before. Thank God nothing happened, but it would have been very nice to have had a pistol with you. And when me and my family were in a restaurant that was robbed, we were just completely defenseless. And I vowed that would never happen again. I have my concealed carry handgun permit and open carry, concealed carry. My daughters, I have three girls. And my oldest, she just turned 11 yesterday. She knows how to operate an AK-47 rifle at 11 years old. Not many 11-year-olds can do that.
And I think that's important. I think it's important when we have, because actually another part of this survey that George did, you would think that a lot of these folks were military veterans. But in fact, they were not. I think it was only like a third. I don't know why I did that survey. Only about a third of them, 23%, had military backgrounds, one out of four. But I think it's important, Jamie, that you do that, that your kids are familiar with them. Gun safety is important. All of my kids, I've taken them to the firing range They understand the guns. They know how to use the guns, and they know what they're for and what they're not for. They're not a toy. They're not to play with. And I think, you know, you need to teach your children gun safety. Very important. I've seen a lot of adults that don't have gun safety. And if you've not been trained, I encourage gun ownership, but safe handling. You need to go through one of these NRA courses. You need to know how to use it and how not to use it. It's very important because guns, they are dangerous if they're not used correctly. Jamie, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's go to Indiana where Melissa is on the line. Melissa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Go right ahead.
Okay. Yes, I believe strongly in gun ownership. I am a conservative Christian. My husband has his lifetime license. I will be getting mine soon, taking courses and getting mine. And as a matter of fact, the church that I go to, a lot of our congregation, they come to church with their guns. So I'm laughing because I go
to a church that's very similar. Our concern is anything ever happened to be the crossfire. But, you know, it's a part of the culture.
It is. It is. It's almost a necessity anymore.
Yeah, when you see the number of shootings that have taken place at churches and the hostility that's been fostered toward people of faith, I mean, you can't be too careful. So, well, Melissa, thanks so much for the call. I believe, look, I'm kind of like, you know, you remember how Barney Fife used to say, my whole body is a weapon. You know, he carried the one bullet in his pocket. I think we have to be prepared to protect ourselves. Now, that's not just having a gun. I think we have to dispense with the idea or the mentality of being victims. I refuse to be a victim. And I've taught my kids the same way. In fact, all of my girls, including my wife, are all black belts. I mean, we've taken Taekwondo. I believe in personal security. They know how to use weapons. And I can't always be there to protect them. And so they need to be able to protect themselves, and I've taught them how to do that. And people think, well, that's what we've got the police for. No. They're like, I've done that too, okay? It's not possible. It's not possible for 1% of the population, roughly, to protect the other 99%. There's too many bad guys out there, too many people that want to do harm to individuals, and increasingly as we become this lawless society. And we have to be able to protect ourselves. And in fact, I challenge you, for those who you say that's what the purpose of law enforcement is, to look into the history of law enforcement and how it evolved and where it came from. It was actually to protect the criminals from the citizens, not the other way around. All right, 866-372-7234. Going to get in a few more calls here that are coming in. Let's go to David in Arkansas. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Absolutely, Tony.
How you doing?
I'm better than I deserve.
All right.
Because according to your question, I find Jesus Christ is Lord. He's my Savior, and I'm an ex-police. So, reckon I got a few guns around, and I've got a question for you if you'd care to answer.
Well, go ahead, and I'll see.
Well, I understand that Trump and his law are going to try to get paid for supposedly by a surcharge on the money that goes from the United States over to Mexico. And I wonder if he's thought about, he's talking about deporting all those illegal aliens. Is he going to do that after he builds the wall and gets that money to do it with, or is he going to do it before, you know?
Well, according to his speech, I believe he says on day one he's going to begin the process of deporting the criminal element that is here. The criminal aliens, he says that there's 2 million of those, and on day one, he goes after them, prioritizing certain groups like gang members and visa overstays for removal. So I guess you can do both. I get your point, though, that, you know, if you start deporting them, you don't have a wall, they start coming back. However, he can place And he said he's going to increase the number of enforcement officials, ICE and others, but he can also use the National Guard and our own military, if need be, to be on the border until the wall is completed. Because, you know, as long as they're flowing back in, it doesn't do a whole lot of good. But to your point about the surcharge, yes, I mean, a lot of the Mexican economy is running on the money that people come over here and earn, not being citizens or residents, not here legally. They take the money and they send it back home, and it drives the Mexican economy. He says, all right, you can do that, but there's going to be a charge on it. And we're going to use that to pay for the wall. So when he says that Mexico is going to pay for it, it's not like they're going to write a check for the wall, because people laugh at him. So they're not going to write a check to the United States to build the wall. Well, the surcharge, it's money that is currently going into Mexico that will stay here and pay for the wall. So, David, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And if you don't get a chance to call in, you can weigh in on Facebook or on Twitter at T. Perkins. Let's go to West Virginia, where James is on the line. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how's it going today?
Hey, it's going quite well. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great. To kind of elaborate on what I heard the tail end of the guy from North Carolina was talking about, guns would be the same thing as modern day if they had swords. I'm a believer, and we have several guns. All my children are trained in gun safety, and we shoot pretty regularly as a family. But if it's such a big issue and other believers have a problem, because I know I've ran into it myself. Well, you're a Christian. Oh my gosh, you've got guns and you can still carry. I don't think Jesus expects us to kind of sit back and smile the way they expect that we do all the time while someone's breaking into our home, taking our stuff, potentially raping or harming our children or spouse. I mean, we gotta defend ourselves, and we have to protect our family. But if it was a big issue, I think Jesus would have addressed it, and he did not, because Peter had a sword when they came to arrest Jesus when he was in the garden. And I'm pretty sure he would have told Peter, don't do that. You shouldn't have that sword. And when Peter was there, I'm sure if you know anything about Peter, he was pretty brazen. I think he had that to protect the disciples and protect Jesus when they're out ministering. So I don't think it's a big issue. I think, there's a proper way to do it. And I think if we're a believer, we should do the legal way and, follow the laws. And, but I don't think we should let the law run over us either. So
right.
That's really the only thing I wanted to add to that.
Thank you, James. And you're absolutely right. There's actually a whole theological holding, actually the doctrine of the war theory that, we just don't have time to go into it, just war theory by Aquinas. But it's not about ourselves, but it's the responsibility we have to protect others. And that's when force is justified. All right? Good point, James. Thanks so much for calling and for listening. All right, folks, out of time, but thanks for tuning in. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time. The Apostle Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.